Hi, I'm Godfrey. I'm in Roscoe Village eating apple pie, and you're listening to Outside the Loop, Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine.
Thank you very much. Good morning and welcome to Outside the Loop. I am Mike Steven, and yes, this is Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine. What we do here on this show, show number 850, is take a look at local issues and topics that don't always get mainstream media attention. Bob Ferguson is the engineer on duty in the WGN radio studio today, so a tip of the hat to good old Ferg. And again, so happy that you are here with us today. The winter weather is here, and I'm here for it. I like the snow. I mean, if we're going to have winter in Chicago, let's have some snow. I love it. And here's something else. It's great to be alive. Those words have been bouncing around my head this week. That was the on-air slogan of the late Chicago radio DJ Lynn Bramer. On Sunday, earlier this week, we lost Lynn. And I didn't know him personally, but I felt like I did in a way. And apparently, many of us felt that way. If you look online, there are so many posts saying that, oh, Lynn Bramer was like a buddy to me, even though I never met him. And then some of us did meet him. Lots of people were out at Cubs games and at WXRT where he worked, radio station events, and Lynn was always taking pictures with fans. I listened to his show, his morning show on WXRT for years, and boy, I felt the same way. I felt like I knew him. And if you never listened to Lynn's show, well, he played great music, first of all, and he had a tenderness and a kindness that I think is really rare for people in the radio business. In an age where media figures are yelling at us more and more frequently with more and more ferocity, Lynn was always there with his smooth vocal timbre and the type of personality that really exuded the, hey, let me buy you a beer kind of vibe. And speaking of that vibe, well, it's actually true. A buddy of mine, Brian, back in 2016, he went to go see a band play in Pilsen at Thalia Hall and then went to Dussek's restaurant afterwards with a friend of his, and Lynn Bramer was there. And so Brian and his friend went up to Lynn and said, hey, Lynn, love your show. And Lynn said, hey, why don't you hang out? Let's have some bourbon and some oysters. And Lynn bought my buddy and his friend bourbon and oysters. That's the kind of guy that he was. Radio and now, of course, podcasting touch so many lives every day. And there are a lot of voices out there. The sprawl of sounds and ideas runs the gamut, and we can pretty much find something or someone to entertain us. But we won't find another Lynn Bramer. He had the ability that I think every good broadcaster really needs to have, and that is to make you feel like you are the only person the voice coming through the speakers is talking to. XRT and Chicagoland lost one of the best. But as we mourn him and as we remember him, Lynn would certainly want us to remember, it's great to be alive. I agree, Lynn. We have a great show for you today. We'll talk about local music. We will talk about books and bookstores because they are thriving in Chicago right now. Stick around. It is indeed great to be alive. So last week on this show, we talked about the importance of the Chicago Public Library System. And this week, let's celebrate our local bookstores. Open Books is a literacy nonprofit that operates used bookstores in the West Loop and Pilsen. And last week, they officially launched the third community bookstore at 2068 North Milwaukee Avenue in Logan Square. This makes Open Books home to the largest network of used bookstores in Chicago. With us to talk all about it is the executive director at Open Books, Eric Johnson. Eric, welcome to Outside the Loop.
Thanks for having me, Mike. And I couldn't be more thrilled to follow in the footsteps of your coverage of the library. We have a lot of friends there and share a common purpose. So thank you for making time for both of us.
You bet. Well, I think, you know, reading the written word, literacy, it's incredibly important. And I think, you know, that's really what you're about here. You started in 2006. Yes, you have bookstores, and we will talk about that in a few minutes. But really, you're focused on literacy, aren't you?
That is correct. I think, as I tell people in Chicago, I think one of the things we're best known for to the public are bookstores. But the fact is, we have a mission to transform lives through reading, writing, and the unlimited power of books. And the bookstores are just one part of that. The way that I talk about our stores, in fact, is that for every book someone donates to those stores, for every book they buy from our stores, they are providing the revenue, they're really, truly helping to power our literacy programs on the ground, in school, out of school, providing free books to kids and families and so on. So, the stores are incredibly important, but just one important piece of our story.
Yeah. So let's talk about that important piece, because and that being the work with literacy and your work with students, because this is really having a tremendous impact in Chicago. How are you engaging the youth? I know you have a lot of programs, but kind of give us an overview of how this works.
Yes, that's a very good question. So there are three components to our work in this largely, and they all, of course, overlap and work together. But we've got our program team, we have our operations team, and we have our retail team. Our program team are on the front lines working in communities, in schools, in daycare centers, in partnership with community-based organizations to work directly with children to provide resources and supports, primarily in this moment around reading, especially coming out of COVID, where a lot of kids simply need additional support and getting caught up or excelling in their ability to read and to really develop a love and appreciation for reading as well. Mm-hmm. Throughout the year, we have a number of different vehicles as well, in addition to that direct service, person-to-person work, in which we provide free books to a number of different neighborhoods, largely situated on the west and south sides. We have what we call our classic book grants, in which we grant books directly to educators and then get into the hands of children. We have countless events at this point every year where we are tabling and hopefully soon to be having a bookmobile in which children especially, but their family members as well, can select books. We're establishing book nooks. We've now established about a dozen in the past year or so, in which we are situating in non-traditional spaces, such as small businesses, barbershops, art centers, places where people can come in and select free books to take with them. So between our in and out of school supports related to reading and writing, and in addition to our free book access work, we're also just really focused on community engagement, using literacy as almost an organizing tool to engage community residents around the power of literacy.
You know, I mean, reading, literacy, books, stories, these are all so important. And I think this is something that really connects communities together. And the fact is that across Chicago, I mean, not everyone has the same access to this stuff. And so what you're trying to do here is you're trying to engage as many youth as possible, but also provide, I think, kind of like an anchor in the community where people can, like you say, they can come by, they can donate books if they have old books that they don't want or need anymore. You'll accept those. They could support you financially, but also just carving out a place where people can come to celebrate words and reading and to build a community around that. I mean, especially like you said, coming out of COVID, let's get back to that, you know?
Yeah, I think there are two things that I would say to that. The first, whenever we are thinking about neighborhoods, the first thing that we think about are the assets that a neighborhood already has. There's just so many things that a community in and of itself brings to itself. And so we have the assets we've got, which are typically in literacy resources and books. And so when we are thinking about our approach to this work, it's truly one of collaboration in which we're offering our assets, finding how those assets pair well with what's already going on within a community. The second thing, there are a number of different ways that people can donate books to us, since you mentioned that. On our website at open-books.org, there is a donate books button. And on that page, you can review a number of different ways to donate books to us, including drop-offs at our stores. We've got a number of drop bins in various places. And then you can also schedule an online, or if through our online application, you can schedule a pickup at your business or residence with a few restrictions. But it's a very generous geographic range from which we'll pick up if someone is unwilling or unable to be able to make the trip into the city, for instance.
So this is exciting because, like we talked about before, you have this new store. This is in Logan Square, 2068 North Milwaukee Avenue. This is the third store. So you have your stores in the West Loop and in Pilsen. Tell us how this came about that you now have this branch of Open Books in Logan Square.
This, the Logan Square store ultimately came about because of the demand that we heard. We have a number of champions, as you might imagine, having been around for 15 years. And as I mentioned earlier in our conversation, one of the things that we're best known for in the view of the general public are the stores. Our brand around that is incredible. People tell us all the time that they find things that they never thought they would have discovered, or in a lot of cases, they find exactly what they're looking for. I mean, we're talking a vast number of titles. Every single one of our location has tens of thousands of titles for people to browse. These are not small spaces by any means. Mm-hmm. And so by demand, we started to contemplate ways that we expanded our footprint. And we looked at a lot of data. Our team produced where we are getting a lot of traffic by way of book donations, book purchases, pairing that to zip codes and addresses and so forth. And what we discovered is the corridor of Milwaukee that runs through Logan Square is we are fortunate to have the number of people in that vicinity that supports our work already. And so it was a natural place to start testing for a third location. And the long and short, it's already been a wild success and people are responding in a way that we thought they might.
That's wonderful. So, I mean, we can go there. It's open, 2068 North Milwaukee Avenue in Logan Square, in addition to your stores in Pilsen and the West Loop neighborhoods of Chicago. And bookstores are great. I mean, I come back to how, like libraries, they are these sort of community anchors or focal points. And there was this article in the New York Times that appeared in July of 2022, and it was saying how the increase in independent bookstores in the U.S. is really something. It's happening even in the midst of the pandemic and coming out of the pandemic. What's going on here? Why do we see such an influx and an interest and a demand for stores like this?
Yeah, Mike, I'm glad you brought up that piece. In fact, as the New York Times reported in that piece, there have been 300 brand new independent bookstores that have cropped up across the U.S. And I attribute that to a number of things. I think one, people may have lost sight during the pandemic, but I think continue to recognize the value of local assets. So your small businesses, whether that's an Ace Hardware or a coffee shop, or in our case, a bookstore, I think that they recognize the value of putting assets back into the community, and especially in our model where assets go to support those that may not have the resources that others do. And then second, I think that there is a longing, again, after the pandemic, for connection, for being back out in the world. And this is, I think, we've heard this a number of times, even before the opening of the Logan Square store. People want to be back in. They want to re-engage. They want to be among people of like minds and like interests. And our Logan Square store is just one more extension of that and a representation of what we're about. So I think between those two things, it's just a very good time to be thinking about local creative endeavors that give back lots of different kinds of capital to the community. And bookstores are one of the best ways to do that.
You are absolutely right about that. This is an exciting time for bookstores. And I'm so excited for you at Open Books that this is happening. The third location at 2068 North Milwaukee Avenue in the Logan Square neighborhood in Chicago, in addition to the West Loop neighborhood store and the Pilsen store. And of course, we can go to open-books.org to see what this great local organization is all about and the great work that it does, because literacy is vitally important. It is something like we've been talking about that's bringing people together. Your work with youth is tremendous, and this is really an exciting time. Eric Johnson, the executive director at Open Books here in Chicago. Eric, thanks for talking to us today. Congratulations on all of your success, and keep it going.
Thank you, Mike, and I want to say thank you to the entire WGN team. You guys are wonderful, and I encourage all of your listeners, come see us. We look forward to meeting you.
As a world-class music town, Chicago is home to a variety of music. One genre that has flourished here for decades is jazz. The quality of musicianship is top-notch, and the city remains home for some incredible jazz artists. Mike Jeffers is the founder of Chicago Jazz Magazine. Check out the website, chicagojazz.com. And really, he never left the music scene, but he's made some career moves. But here in 2023, he has renewed a commitment to highlighting great music locally. And Mike Jeffers is here with us on Outside the Loop. Mike, it's great to talk to you again, man. I think the last time we talked was in the middle of the pandemic. I don't know what we talked about, but I'm sure it was like we need to survive. That's probably what it was.
I think that's what it was. Yeah, good to be back on the show. Thanks for thinking of me. I'm glad to reconnect with you and your great audience here and talk a little bit about jazz.
Absolutely. We should also mention that you're a drummer, great drummer. You and I have played together in bands before. And so, all right, first of all, chicagojazz.com. I know that you have lots happening here that isn't just a magazine, really, but you have all kinds of multimedia adventures that you're doing. ChicagoJazz.com, tell us about what this website is.
Well, you know, I started this whole process without going down the long wormhole about my background on it, but I bought the name ChicagoJazz.com in 1999 when I was a professional musician playing seven nights a week in Chicago. And because I bought the name, it spurred my interest to get into business and how I could actually do something and help promote this incredible music that's been in Chicago since the early 1900s. And that kind of sparked the whole process of me learning business and starting ChicagoJazz.com. And then I started Chicago Jazz Magazine in 2002. We were a print magazine up until 2017 when I decided to take the whole thing digital. And since that time, I've always kept ChicagoJazz.com up to date as much as I can and trying to cover the scene. And Chicago Jazz Magazine was a monthly digital. But then with the pandemic hitting, and as you mentioned, I didn't really get out of the music business because I helped open up an incredible art center, Epiphany Center for the Arts, over in the West Loop. So I was tied into the music scene, but I wasn't able to do all of my other stuff that I had been doing just because of the sheer magnitude of the project. But this past June, I ended up shifting out of that and restarting everything and kind of reconceptualizing ChicagoJazz.com, and decided, you know, doing a monthly digital magazine, although back in 2017, 18, 19, made sense. Nowadays, I felt like we needed to drop content and really cover the scene in a different way. And that's how ChicagoJazz.com kind of reformulated itself here. And we've got podcasts and video shows and reviews and all that great stuff dropping daily. Yeah. On that platform.
Yeah, it's cool. The story here, what you're doing, I think is really neat, because I mean, first of all, it's a story of, you know, this entrepreneurial spirit. You have this background. You went to University of North Texas. You're a drummer. you're an accomplished musician and you wanted to get into the business side of this. So you went for it here, and especially with jazz. And we've talked about how jazz sometimes gets a bad rap, that it's too heady, it's too intellectual, it's not relatable enough. And I think what you're doing through ChicagoJazz.com is you are making it relatable. You are bringing, as you say, this daily content. So if it's a video interview with a musician or if it's a podcast, I mean, really all the time the site's updated and you can kind of get these tidbits of knowledge and information about the jazz scene and beyond, quite frankly, in Chicago. And I think this is bringing jazz to a more relatable position for a lot of us.
Well, and you know, from covering, and you do a ton of great music stuff on this show, you know what happens. I mean, you start talking to a musician, you start telling their story, and regardless if you like that genre of music or not, you get sucked in by these artists' stories.
Yeah.
And that really connects, I think, people that might be on the fence. Maybe, you know, I always like to say, oh, you don't like jazz, you know, because we do the program book for the Blues and Jazz Fest for the city as well in the summer. So I run into a lot of people out and they're like, oh, I don't like jazz at all. Why would I want to do that? I said, well, do you like Frank Sinatra? Oh, I love Frank Sinatra. I said, well, unfortunately, you love jazz then, because that's jazz. And, you know, once people understand that, once people understand that these artists and the background of what they're doing and stuff, it sucks people in. It's the stories. And that's what we're trying to tell with the podcast and the video show, and, you know, try to pull people in. And I think it's starting to work because, you know, from doing all of your music stuff, I mean, it's hard to pin down people into specific genres anymore. It's just one of those things where everybody's influenced by so much stuff. I mean, you listen to me when I do some of these interviews, you know, I could be talking to a jazz saxophone player, but they're influenced by, you know, rap, hip hop, funk, you know, Latin, everything. And it all comes into their playing. And once people understand that and they hear that story, well, then that breaks it down, because now they don't have that barrier up. They're like, oh, I want to go see so-and-so play because I love his story.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we're trying to tell through all this content that I'm starting to drop again on ChicagoJazz.com.
So we can go to ChicagoJazz.com. We can see the videos. We can hear the podcasts as well. And when you're talking to these musicians, you know, here we are. I don't know in what stage of the pandemic we're in, if it's the tail end, who knows where we are, but I feel like we're in a spot where people are back out. And I've talked to musicians. They're gigging again. People are coming to Chicago, these acts. When you talk to these musicians, I mean, is that the sense that you're getting, that, okay, everything's pretty much back full throttle, we're doing this again, and we're picking up where we left off? Is that the sense that you're getting from what you do?
I think that it's not quite back to where it was in 2019 before the pandemic, you know, 2019, early 2020, mm-hmm. but it's getting there. And, you know, if you look at some of the clubs like the Green Mill, Dave Gemmelo, the great, talk about entrepreneurs in music, Dave Gemmelo running the Green Mill there. You know, he still isn't doing the late, late sets yet. And it's mainly because of staffing problems. So it's not necessarily because the audience isn't there. And I think that that's part of the issue with a lot of the clubs and a lot of the venues, is the audiences are starting to come back. I don't see a lot of people too worried about going to a club like they used to be anymore. Because, you know, everything is fairly safe now and everybody's vaccinated for the most part. But the staffing issues are really causing some of the slowdown as far as growing back to where levels were in 2019 and 2020. But, you know, from a musician standpoint, they're being contacted. This is really going to be the first summer when I think all of the festivals are back. All of the tours are going to start coming back, because even last year was piecemealing things together for a lot of musicians because it just wasn't full throttle again. But this is the first year that all these great festivals are coming back, which really starts to build things, which really starts to get people out on the road and putting together different, you know, club dates in between festivals. That starts to build that whole circuit again as well, which is only going to help draw in more audience members and stuff. So I really think 2023 is going to be the first year. I think 2024 is when it's really going to be back, maybe even better than ever.
Wow. All right. Well, so that's something to look forward to. And I know that you talking to these musicians, it's been, I don't want to say easy, maybe easier because the technology, things like Zoom and how we had to navigate the year and a half or 2 years there. But really, you're connecting with folks. I mean, I've watched these videos, and some of these really great musicians, they're sitting in their living room, they're sitting in their studios, in their basement. So you, what I love about it is that it's this kind of intimate look that you get to take us into here. You give us this of these artists kind of in their natural environment.
Yeah, some of them are even in their cars.
The real working story here, right?
Luckily, they pulled over, so they're not driving around. But yeah, no, it's real interesting, but it's nice now because, you know, and I am going to start doing some in-person interviews again. I think when you and I had talked one time, I was doing interviews from a hot dog stand down in Bridgeport.
Yes, you were.
Super cool because it was out of the club. And my whole thing is when you get a musician, you know, I'm a musician, right? And when we're hanging out on the breaks or we're hanging out, we're not playing, it's just different conversations we're having. So I wanted to make it so that people didn't meet me at a club and have like this interview. I wanted to meet people different places. And in lieu of doing that, because of the pandemic and everything else, and especially now everybody knows how to use Zoom because that wasn't the case back in 2020 before the pandemic happened. It's really cool because I'm able to talk to people throughout Chicago, but now starting in March, I'm rebranding the show and we're going to be doing Talking Jazz, and that's going to open it up to national and international artists again. So I can reach and talk to people anywhere, but it's cool because they're in their element. So they're super chill.
Yeah.
And it just opens up the conversation more. And that's, as you know, I mean, you do a lot of interviews when somebody's totally relaxed and they're talking about something they love and they're talking about their background, you just get so much more out of it. And that's what I'm trying to do with all of this. Cause I really feel like once people understand the story of these musicians, it just breaks the barrier down and they're going to want to go out and find out more about them.
It's a really cool look into the world of these musicians, and we can check out chicagojazz.com. And, you know, natural environments, you and I should get some beers sometime and go to a baseball game. That's what we should do. Natural environment.
Sounds like a fantastic idea. You know, you always have the best ideas on the show. So.
Seriously, though, chicagojazz.com. That's where we should go. You can get really all this content, insights into these artists from Chicago and beyond. And it's a way to tap into the local music scene. And Mike Jeffers is really at the center of it. He is the founder of Chicago Jazz Magazine. ChicagoJazz.com, again, is that website. Mike, it is great talking with you, and we will catch up soon. But best of luck going forward, man. Keep doing what you're doing, and here's to 2023.
I agree, and I thanks so much for having me on the show. And congratulations on your success. Holy cow, you're still going strong after all these years. So that's awesome, man. I look forward to actually seeing you in person sometime soon.
I'll sign an autograph for you.
Oh, wow.
Us today to talk about his local music is Daniel Gunderson, local musician. Check out danielgunderson.bandcamp.com, and we'll also talk about the studio that he's involved in, ravenslake-music.com. Daniel, welcome to Outside the Loop.
Well, it's good to be here. Good to speak with you.
Let's talk about what you have going on here. So your latest record is called Remember. And we'll get to that in just a second. But, you know, it's interesting because you've been really performing in Chicago over the last 40 years, but you haven't necessarily been up front. You've been kind of in a band situation or more of a support role. So why now? Why step up and go solo now?
It was really, if you will, it's almost a comparison to Tom Petty. Mm-hmm. When he decided he needed to do Full Moon Fever. You know, he had a successful band, but he just said, I just need to do this for a lot of reasons. And that's a lot of what it was for me. And there was some music that I had written and some approaches I wanted to take that didn't fit any of the bands that I was currently involved with. And I really also wanted a place to showcase. I recorded about 95% of the music on there is recorded by me. So I really wanted a way to be able to say, look, I'm not just a utility person on stage. I really can do it all.
Right. I wanted to talk to you about that. So this is amazing. Whenever I hear this, whenever an artist does this, I think it's just, it's incredible. So like you say, 95% of what's on this record, again, it's called Remember by Daniel Gunderson. It's you. So you're multi-tracking this thing. You're playing all kinds of instruments here.
Absolutely. It was and it was an interesting challenge in recording because we didn't know. We'd vary from, okay, we're going to record this song today, and we'd work on it. And so I'd be, let's put down a bass line, let's put down a guitar line. And some days it was, let's just play a lot of bass. Let's just play a lot of guitar. There was one day I think I put down drum tracks on three different songs. And so both of those mindsets really required a bit of a shift because it was shifting from, here, let me think about the music or this particular song to here, let me think about the instrument, but also having to shift the idiom of the instrument from song to song to song.
That's not an easy thing to do. If you play music, I mean, you're shifting your mindset. For most musicians, you have to worry about one instrument, maybe two, or you're singing and you're playing something. But here, it's totally a mindset shift, and you've got to think about the song and the music in a completely different way.
Maybe it's an advantage. I grew up on a farm in Montana, and every farm kid winds up having to fix just about everything they drive or work with. And so I've just grown up thinking, well, you better be able to do everything that's around you, because if you don't, you're not going to get home.
Right. That's a good point. So this record came out in October, and again, we can check out danielgunderson.bandcamp.com. It features a mix of original music, and you have a few covers on here as well, don't you?
I do. In fact, one of the covers, Knockin', I've heard that arrangement in my head for 30 years, but I've never been able to work with the band to even perform it live. It's always been something that just, came one of the reasons that I wanted to record the album, because I couldn't ask a band to do what I wanted them to do. Yeah. So, I mean, being able to say, hey, I want to take what I'm hearing, what I've been hearing in this song, and bring it out. In a couple cases, there's some very deep cuts. The version of Climb That Hill Blues, the Tom Petty song.
Yeah.
I've never heard it. I'm a huge Tom Petty fan. My wife and son, they're like, would you please change Sirius XM to something else, Dad? There are other artists. But I've never heard them play it on that channel. And so being able to bring something out that was such a deep cut, the Toad the Wet Sprocket song, the same thing. They'll play it in concert, but I never heard it on the radio. So to be able to have things that were popular and well-known and put my own spin, but also say, look, here's some artists that you really need to hear the full catalog, was something I wanted to be able to do.
I'm wondering, going forward here, I mean, people are back out. We're going to live music experiences. Are you planning on getting out there and playing live anytime soon?
I need to. I'll admit, I kind of went into very much lockdown mode during COVID.
Sure.
So I have to kind of change my mindset a little bit to think about going out. But I would absolutely want to start playing out both as a solo artist and with some of my bands again. But it really is kind of, again, a different mindset. I've got to think about, okay, wait a minute, I can go do this again.
Right.
So I'll admit I'm one of the more locked down people that I know.
Well, you know, it's also this. I mean, if you're playing in a band, you know, and you're more of a support role, let's say you're in the band itself, you're not necessarily up front. I feel like the more people in the band, I've said this before, the more people in the band, it's, if you're having a bad night, it's a little easier to rely on some of the other folks to make you sound good. But, you know, if you're up front or it's just you solo, I mean, that's more pressure and everything is on you. And again, it's a way of shifting your mindset about how you're performing and playing these songs.
One of the differences that I've seen between performing in a band and performing solo, and I've done a solo performance. I did it for a couple of years after my folk partner and I broke up, about 25 years ago. When you're at a band, you can collect that information, that energy that you're all creating as a band, and kind of throw it at the audience. And one of the things I keep telling people is, you don't understand. When I'm with my band on stage, I don't know that y'all exist because you're listening to your band and feeding off of their energy. But when you're playing a solo gig, you've got to find that person in the audience that just seems to connect with that first song, and you sing the entire concert to them because they're resonating off of what you're singing. And it's amazing. In that same way, you don't realize the band is there or that the audience is there. Sometimes you don't. I've come out of gigs and I've gone, I don't know. I didn't realize there were another couple hundred people there. I just knew about you.
That's really something interesting, I think, perspective on that. We should also mention this briefly, the studio that you're involved in. So Ravens Lake Music, ravenslake-music.com. You are working in the studio now for other musicians as well.
Absolutely. We've got several musicians that we're working on their albums. One of the things that I think having that multi-instrumental approach, I'm a huge fan of the Wrecking Crew. Raven is a really phenomenal keyboard player, David, and bass player. Both of us play bass. So we've got the ability to kind of internally Wrecking Crew. If you're a solo musician, guitar and voice, and you're thinking, I need a bit more, we've got that ability to do that in the house. And I think that's something that can really add, because we're not just the people producing and recording, we can actually play on an album as well and come up with the sound that you need.
It's really cool. So we should all check out ravenslake-music.com. That is the website, and you're always looking for artists to work with. And of course, your Bandcamp site, where we can listen to your music, danielgunderson.bandcamp.com. Daniel Gunderson is a local musician. Maybe in the not too distant future, we will see you live. We'll see what happens.
It would be good. It would be good. I'm thinking hopefully as the summer comes up and there's a little more outdoors and I'm itching to get out of my house as well, you know, that'd be a good chance to get back on stage again.
You bet. Well, Daniel, thank you so much for talking to us today, and good luck with everything going forward.
Well, thank you very much, and good luck with you. It's good to talk to somebody else behind a microphone.
And that will do it. Outside the Loop, show number 850 is all wrapped up. Thank you so much for listening to the show this week. I do appreciate it. Thanks to Bob Ferguson for all of his engineering skills in the studio today. Have a wonderful week. I will talk to you again next time right here on Outside the Loop.